Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you shows from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. In this hour, crime. Later on, we hear the story, Girl in the Powder Blue Jack, on Suspense. But right now, the Screen Directors Playhouse adapts the Ernest Hemingway story and subsequent film, The Killers, on NBC from June 5th, 1949. Burt Lancaster, the star of the film, reprises his first movie role on radio next.
From Hollywood, the NBC Theater presents... Directors Playhouse, production The Killers, director Robert Siodmak, stars Burt Lancaster, Shelley Winters. The Hollywood Screen Directors present A Postscript to Murder, The Killers, starring Burt Lancaster and Shelley Winters, and introducing the director of the film, Robert Siodmak. It's not always necessary to have lived a fabulous life in order to create fabulous motion pictures. But in the case of our guest screen director tonight, it most certainly has helped. At 19, he was a seasoned Shakespearean actor. At 20, director of the Dresden Germany Stock Exchange. At 21, rich. At 23, broke again. At 24, he launched the brilliant motion picture career that was to bring him to Hollywood, the director of such thrilling films as Dark Mirror, Spiral Staircase, and tonight's story, The Killers. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Robert Siodmak.
Thank you. Thank you. Hollywood has given the world two kinds of motion pictures which are typically American. They are the Western and the gangster films, such as The Killers. This is not to say that America is a country of gangsters any more than a country of cowboys. It means only that America has created a new and fascinating kind of entertainment. Such is our story. That instant is drama. Now here is The Killers, starring Burt Lancaster in his original role of Sweet and Shelley Winter as Kitty.
Sweet! Hey, Sweet! Sweet, it's me, Nick. It's Nick. What are you doing laying down, Sweet? You sick?
No.
Listen, Sweet. I was down in George's diner when two hard guys came in looking for you. They said they were looking for you to kill you.
I know.
Then what are you laying here for?
There's nothing I can do.
Well, don't you want me to go and see the police?
That wouldn't do any good.
Couldn't you get out of town?
I'm through with running away.
But why? Why do they want to kill you?
I did something wrong once. Thanks for coming.
I just thought... Well, okay. But they're coming looking for you, Sweet. They're coming looking for you.
Did something wrong once. What? A gas station attendant murdered in an out-of-the-way town called Brentwood, allowing himself to be murdered, helplessly and without complaint, submitting to extermination. Why? Why does a man come to such an abject end? Headquarters put me on the case because I had some college criminology and because I'd known Swede, the victim, back in the old days. This isn't the story of how we got Swede's killers. That's routine police work, and you've heard that story 1,000 times. What brings a man to such an end as Swede's? That's the important personal story, and this is it. One by one, we rounded up people who'd known the Swede, some of them on the level. One who wasn't on the level was a gunsel named Blinky Franklin, who knew the Swede when... Give, Blinky.
Well, let me see. 10 years ago. Sweet had just knocked Soldier Burns for ghouls, eh? That put Sweet right up there as a contender for the light heavyweight championship. Well, after the fight, I took Sweet over to Jim Colfax's apartment where a big party was going on. Kitty Collins, Jim's girl, was singing over at the piano. Right away, I see that the Swede's interested. So I waited for Kitty to finish his song, and then I brought the Swede over to meet her.
I loved him so, but there I go. Tonight I must forget. No more memories. Swing out, tonight I must forget. Music, maestro, please.
Kitty.
Oh, hello, Blinky. I don't see you beating your palms.
Look, Kitty, I want you to meet Sweet Anderson. Sweet's a coming light heavy champ.
Oh, how do you do?
Hello, Kitty.
You two make yourself acquainted. I want to talk to some of the boys.
So you're the next champion, Mr. Anderson.
Do you like the fights?
I'm afraid I never saw one.
No kidding.
I can't bear brutality. The idea of two men beating each other to a pulp makes me ill.
Well, I don't get hurt.
You're unusual, then.
I'll go into some other racket before I let them knock me punchy.
Really? It's too bad Jim is out of town. He'd like to speak to you.
Who's Jim?
Jim Colfax. He owns this apartment.
Oh. Well, why would he want to see me?
Oh, he has lots of irons in the fire. I'll arrange it for you.
Well, thanks. That's swell, Miss...
Kitty, remember?
I remember.
Well, don't forget. I'll see you at the fight sometime.
Swede was finished. He'd broken his hand badly in that fight. He'd never fight again. For a while, I didn't see the Swede. Then one night, I was in Lou Tingle's Arena Cafe. I'd been given a tip on some hot jewelry, and sure enough, there was some of it walking in on Kitty Collins' dress. Swede was with her, looking very prosperous indeed. I let him sit down, then I walked over, trying to make it look like a social visit, for a while, anyway.
Sam Redden. How are you, boy?
Hello, Sweet.
Kitty, you know Sam Redden.
Yeah, I know Sam.
You're looking pretty sharp, Sweet. That numbers racket really pays off.
Boy, you know everything. Say, that broken hand was the best thing ever happened to me. Well, how are you anyway? What's on your mind, Sam?
That diamond brooch Kitty's wearing.
What are you talking about?
Grand larceny and hot jewelry.
Do you mean to tell me that brooch was stolen?
Let's take a ride downtown, Kitty.
Now, wait a minute, Sam.
Sweet.
Is this a pinch?
Don't let them take me.
You can't do this, Sam.
You're not going to stop me, are you, Swede?
Look, let you and me go someplace and talk, huh?
Look, Swede, if your girl happens to be a shoplifter, I'm sorry about it.
It's not true, Swede. I didn't take it. I had no idea it was stolen. Make them listen, Swede. I'll give it back. I'll leave town, but don't let them take me, Swede, please. They'll throw the book at me.
Look, Sam, you don't want Kitty. I swipe that stuff. I'm the one you're after. Get me?
Okay, I get you. If that's the way you want it?
Yes, Sam. That's the way I want it.
I pleaded with him to tell the truth, but he stuck to his story and it got him 3 years. When he got out, Blinky Franklin met him and took him up to a room in a midtown hotel where Big Jim Colfax and some of the boys were working on the biggest payroll job of Jim's career. Kitty Collins, the girl for whom Sweet had served 3 years, sat on a trunk, knitting.
I guess you know everybody here, don't you, Sweet?
Welcome back, Sweet.
Hello, Jim.
There's Dum Dum over there grousing around.
Hiya.
Of course you know, Kitty.
Hello, Sweet.
Didn't hear from you much in prison, Kitty.
I'm not much for writing. You know that.
I know it now.
Let's get started, huh, boss? What's the new pitch?
Pull up a chair, Sweet. Now, this is Bick. It's the Prentice Hat Factory payroll over in Hackensack. We walk in as workers tomorrow morning and lift the roll. I'll give you the details in a minute. After the stick-up, we split up and meet again on the halfway house tomorrow night on Route 1.
Halfway house, Route 1. How much is in it for us?
Yeah, it ought to be good for $250,000.
Not bad.
Split how?
Well, I'll take the first $100,000. You can divide the rest three ways.
Who declared you in for the big slice?
I declared myself.
What about Kitty?
Kitty's with me.
What do you mean, Kitty's with you?
Don't start anything now, Swede.
What do you mean, she's with you? I spent 3 years in stir for a robbery she done. What are you trying to give me? She's with you.
You want a blueprint, Swede? All right, I'll give you a blueprint.
Shut up, Jim.
You keep your mouth shut if you don't want it slap shut.
You put a hand on Kitty, Jim. You just try.
Well, keep out of it, Swede. Kitty's Jim's girl now.
Get out of my way, Blinky.
Swede, mind your own business.
This is my business.
You crazy, Swede. What did you hit him for?
I'll kill you for that, Swede.
Reach for your gun and I'll kick your brains
out. Cut it out, both of you. Cut it out.
Why, you dumb palooka. Give me a hand, Blinky.
Yeah, yeah.
I ought to give you the works, Swede.
Anytime you say Colfax.
I got a job to do tomorrow. Tomorrow morning at 8. Here's the full pitch now.
All cars watch roads leading from Prentice Hat Factory in Hackensack. Armed holdup by at least three men leaving holdup scene in three separate cars. All cars proceed to Prentice Hat Factory at once. All cars calling all cars, calling all cars.
Listening to the Hollywood Screen Directors presentation of The Killers, starring Burt Lancaster and Shelley Winters, and introducing the director of the film, Robert Siodmak. This is the concluding program in the present series. Beginning July 1st, The Screen Director's Playhouse will be heard on Fridays at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Saving Time under the sponsorship of Pabst Blue Ribbon Beer. The opening program in the new series will star Cary Grant in Mr. Blanding's Builds His Dream House. Remember the time, July 1st, and each Friday thereafter at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Saving Time. We invite you to be with us then. And now, back to the second act of tonight's production of The Killers.
Who is it?
Kitty, quick. Let me in, Sweet.
What's the matter?
Close the door. Sweet, I'm gambling my life coming to you like this.
What's the matter? What's wrong?
Colfax is going to double-cross you.
Going to double-cross me?
They aren't going to Halfway House after the robbery. You'll go there, but they'll be someplace else. And so will the money.
Why are you telling me this? You're Jim's girl.
Sweet, I can't let them double-cross you after you took that three-year rap for me.
Is that the truth?
So help me, Swede, it's the truth. They're going to meet at that old farmhouse on the North Turnpike.
They are, huh? They are. Thanks for putting me wise, Kitty.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to do them like they mean to do me.
Don't give me away, darling.
Don't you worry, baby.
You know why Jim hates you like he does? Because of me, Swede. He knows how it really is between you and me.
Oh, Kitty. Kitty, why did you ever go back to him?
I don't know. Maybe because I hate him. I'm poison, Swede. Poison anyone I really love. I don't care if I hurt Colfax.
Kitty. Kitty, you're not going back to him again. You're leaving with me tonight, after I handle Colfax at the farmhouse.
I love you, Swede. Hold me.
I'll come back tonight. We'll go to Atlantic City.
Hold me, darling.
Just the two of us. You and me.
Yes, darling, yes. Hold me tight. Tighter, darling. Tighter.
Boys, I'm tired of waiting for Swede to show up. I'll just take my money now. Shove me the suitcase, dum-dum. Let's start counting.
Okay, by me, boss.
Start counting, Jim, so I can start counting.
Okay, boys, hold it.
Swede, what's the idea?
Get your hands up. All three.
You're reaching for trouble, Swede.
Swell idea you guys had, huh? Leave me to cool my heels at the halfway house while you split the dough here.
You were told of the change, else why you're here.
Shut up. I'll take that suitcase. Thanks, boys. Don't move. Next time, play it straight.
Come on, Ed.
All right, stop it. He'll mow you down as soon as you come out of the door.
Dirty double-crossing rat.
He'll get paid off, dum-dum. But good.
Swede and Kitty escaped to Atlantic City with the $250,000. They stayed there for several days. Then, well, a woman named Queenie, a chambermaid at the hotel where they stayed, supplied us with the rest of that episode. Queenie?
I was on night duty, turning down the beds. When I got to his room, 1212, I heard something smash inside. I went in, and that poor young man was a sight to behold. I'll never forget it. There he stood, a wild look in his eyes, half crazy, holding a splintered chair in his hand. Just as I came in, he threw it at the dresser mirror. Then he just stood there, like a big hurt kid. It was awful.
She's gone.
Oh, sir, you mustn't carry on like that, sir.
She's gone. Where did she go?
You mean the lady came here with you?
She's gone.
She went out this morning with a suitcase.
A suitcase?
The laundry, she said.
She's gone. I'm going too.
Oh, please, sir. Oh, not the window. Not the window, please.
Take your hands off.
Oh, please, sir, please don't.
Let go.
Please don't jump.
Let go of me. Let me go.
Please don't do it, mister. If you do that, you'll never see the face of God.
I want to die.
You'll burn in hell till the end of time.
I want to die.
That way. Come over here. That's better. There, now lie down.
Kitty.
There.
Kitty.
Give me Dr. Wiley's room right away, please.
Swede never saw Kitty again. For 6 years, Swede Anderson dropped out of sight. Then one day, a heavy, sleek convertible rolled up on the gravel of a gasoline station in Brentwood, New Jersey.
Good evening, sir. Fill her up?
Yeah, I guess so, bud.
Do you usually take Ethel? Ethel?
Yeah. Yeah, Swede. Ethel.
I must look Swedish. Everyone calls me Swede.
This town got a name?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. What is it?
Brentwood.
Brentwood?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Brentwood, huh? Yes, sir. Sweet.
The next night, the killers came to Brentwood, and Swede lay on his bed, numbly awaiting his fate.
I did something wrong once.
In someone's opinion, a blast of gunfire corrected that wrong. Swede had double-crossed Colfax, taken $250,000 from him, and then Kitty had taken it from Swede. It took some doing for us to get the details, but we got them. But not the final details. We needed Kitty for that. We got Kitty. I found her singing in a plushy nightclub, and I made a date to meet her there after the last floor show. At a corner table, I told Kitty some of what we already knew about Swede and the Prentice hat holdup. Then I popped the $250,000 question.
What makes you think I've got that money, Sam?
We got Blinky Franklin. Blinky talked. There's a chambermaid in Atlantic City who remembers your face from pictures we showed her. And I've just had a talk with Jim Colfax.
You've seen Jim?
He's mighty provoked about your skipping out with all that money.
You told him I took it?
He's mighty provoked.
Look, Sam, suppose I raise 70,000 of the missing money. Sam, I've turned over a new leaf. I've got a home now and a husband. I'm leading a life that's worth fighting for. Sam, what can I do to save something out of that life? Tell me.
Turn state's evidence.
What do you want to know?
Who planned the robbery?
Jim Colfax.
Say that in court?
Yes.
After you took the money and left Swede flat in Atlantic City, how did you get rid of Jim Colfax?
I staged a fight with him 2 days later and walked out on him, too.
And you were in the clear because nobody knew you'd been with the Swede and taken his money away from him. Lovely girl.
Sam, can't we go somewhere else and finish this talk?
Where?
Well, how about your apartment?
Sold.
I'll go powder my nose and get out of this costume. Don't go away, will you?
I glanced over toward the entrance, and there they were, Death and his twin brother, and they were coming my way. I'd never seen them before, but I knew who they were. The killers. Their faces were empty of everything except that blank cruelty of the professional murderer. When I saw the long, vicious revolvers come up at me out of their coats, I didn't hesitate. I slid under the table fast and started shooting. Death and his twin brother were down. And I jumped up and made a beeline for Kitty's dressing room. It was empty. The door to the outside alley was open, and Kitty, of course, was gone. But I bet I knew where. The house was an elaborate one on the edge of town. The front door pushed open easily. Someone had gone in too fast and left it unlatched. I went in and closed the door. Whoever had come in had also alerted him. Jim Colfax was waiting for me at the top of the stairs.
Redden?
Present.
And my boys didn't get you?
On the contrary, Jim.
Well, allow me.
Colfax?
Better get me a doctor, Sam.
Jim, what is it? Oh, Jim.
Better still, a priest.
Jim. Jim, darling, I'm sorry. I love you, Jim.
I know, Kitty. It wasn't your fault. Sam.
Yeah, Jim.
Tell me, how'd you figure it?
Look, anyone can go to the Hall of Records and find out you and Kitty were married.
You knew I was lying when I said I'd thrown Jim over.
We know a lot of things, Kitty. I don't know why Jim sent those killers to blast the Swede.
I had to. Swede was the only one who knew that Kitty had ever had the money.
Poor Swede. He never knew that Kitty brought the money straight back to you. You two framed the whole thing so you wouldn't have to split the take with anyone. You just used the Swede to pull your chestnuts out of the fire.
But I didn't have anything to do with Swede's killing.
No?
Jim, tell him. Tell him I didn't know about those gunmen. Jim, you're dying, so why not say it? Say Kitty is innocent.
It's no use, Kitty.
Say it. Say it, Jim. Say Kitty is innocent. Say it.
It's no use, Kitty.
Say it. Say it. Say it.
He's dead. That's it. I didn't tell you a detective story full of clues and pursuit. I wanted to tell you a Swede story. There are a lot of people in the world like Swede. More sinned against, perhaps, than sinning. Sure, Swede was to blame for a lot of things. But who is to blame for Swede? He's gone now, despair dying on his lips.
There's nothing I can do about it. I'm through with running away. I did something wrong once. Thanks for coming.
What about Swede? I read something the other day, I can't forget it. It went, any man's death diminishes me because I am involved in mankind. And therefore send not to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee.
I did something wrong once.
What loosed the killers on Swede? Something he did? Or something we didn't do, all of us?
I did something wrong once.
I wonder. What did we do wrong?
Return in just a moment. But first, a message of interest to all our listeners. This is the concluding program in our present series. Beginning July 1st, the Screen Director's Playhouse will be presented for your enjoyment on Fridays at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Saving Time under the sponsorship of Pabst Blue Ribbon Beer. Now, here again are our stars, Burt Lancaster and Shelley Winters, and Screen Director Robert Siodmak. Robert, at the beginning of the program, you said that The Killers is a typical American film.
Oh, yes, it is.
Then tell me something. Why were you, with your European background, chosen to direct the picture?
Well, it's very simple, because I hadn't spent my life in America. Everything was new to me. I saw things that you don't see.
Well, like what?
Well, let me give you an example. When I first traveled across the United States, I came to a small town with a big sign. The sign said Coca-Cola. So I said to myself, I'm now in Coca-Cola, New Mexico. And then I came through Burma Shave, Arizona. See what I mean?
And that's the way you became a director?
Certainly. My dear Shelley, it's merely a matter of applied ignorance.
Oh, no, it isn't, Robert. It's a matter of talent and skill and cultural experience. And I guess being born in Europe is kind of an asset.
Oh, please, I wasn't born in Europe. My first years I spent in the United States.
No kidding. Well, what's your hometown?
Why, can't you tell by my accent?
Well... Robert, forgive me, but no. Somehow I just can't place it.
Well, I tell you, Memphis, Tennessee.
You were born in Memphis?
Well, certainly. Listen, I'll prove it to you. Good night, you all.
Good night, Colonel.
Good night.
And good night to you, Burt Lancaster, Shelley Winters, and Robert Siodmak. Mark Hellinger's The Killers was presented through the courtesy of Universal International Studios, who will soon release Calamity Jane and Sam Bass, a Technicolor production starring Yvonne DiCarlo and Howard Duff. Burt Lancaster will soon be seen starring in his own Norma production of The Hawk and the Arrow, soon to be released by Warner Brothers. Robert Siodmak's forthcoming release is the Hal Wallace production for Paramount, Thelma Jordan. Shelley Winters will soon be seen in Take One, False Step, a Universal International picture co-starring William Powell. Robert Siodmak appeared through the courtesy of Universal International Studios, who will soon world premiere the picture Illegal Entry, starring Howard Duff, Martha Torin, and George Brent. Included in tonight's cast were Sam Edwards, Tony Barrett, Frank Gristel, Bill Conrad, Gwen Delano, Clark Gordon, and Dan Riss. The Killers was adapted for radio by Milton Geiger, and original music was composed and conducted by Henry Russell. Production was under the supervision of Howard Wiley, associate producer Bill Karn. Your announcer has been Frank Barton. Listen again when Screen Director's Playhouse returns to the air on Friday, July 1st at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Saving Time. Remember,
Screen Director's Playhouse, production Mr. Blandings Builds His Dream House, director H.C. Potter, star Cary Grant, date Friday, July 1st.
The Screen Director's Playhouse on Tuned to Yesterday from June 5th, 1949 on NBC, adapting the 1946 motion picture The Killers. It opened in New York at the Winter Garden Theater in August of 46, and the movie was so popular that on a normal big day, the theater would raise between $2,000 and $3,000. On opening day of The Killers, it was over $10,000. It's an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and now on to suspense with the story The Girl in the Powder Blue Jack. A CBS broadcast from August 28, 1960.
And now, another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
The Girl in the Powder Blue Jag. Written for Suspense by Walter Black.
Mm-hmm.
so much dirt in my life. The more I sweep it, the more I stir up. Oh, that's the trouble with these summer places. By the time you get them clean, it's time to shut up and leave. Oh, darn. Be right there. I said I was coming. Now, what's up? What's the matter, miss?
Please, can I come in?
Well, sure. What happened? You had an accident or something?
Oh, I cracked up my car just down the road. There's a big wall.
The beach wall, yeah.
Oh, I guess I must have been going too fast. The next thing I knew, I'd hit it. I must have blacked out for a minute.
You got a family doctor you want me to call?
I don't know.
What?
I don't even know who I am.
How's the bed, hon?
Oh, it's fine, thank you, Mrs. Sims.
Now, you call me Claire. Everybody else does.
Claire.
That's better. The man at the police station said he'd bring a doctor with him.
I feel so lost, not even knowing my own name.
But you do. It's Kendall Endicott. Kind of a nice, out of the ordinary name, too.
But how do I know it's mine? A checkbook with a name printed on it? I could have stolen it.
You're not the type, hon.
What type am I? I don't know anything about myself.
Well, take it from me, hon. You're just not the type. Besides, that car you were driving, that's a Jaguar. You don't buy those for cigarette coupons. Incidentally, you're lucky. All you need's a new front grill. Oh, thank goodness, that must be the police. Now, no more worrying, hon. We'll find out all about you now.
Check with you again tomorrow, Miss Endicott, and don't you worry. You do just like the doctor said. Just get plenty of rest.
Find out anything, Sergeant Hadley?
Just what you already told me, ma'am.
What'd the doctor say? He wouldn't tell me anything.
He says it looks like amnesia.
Gee. I feel so sorry for her.
Funny first name she's got. Kendall. Ever know a girl by that name before?
No.
Me either. Can I use your phone?
Oh, go right ahead.
I got a hunch. I don't know if it's worth anything, but it doesn't cost anything. Hello, Standard? Let me have the editor, Mr. Jameson, please. He's a friend of mine. I've done him a few favors. Mm. Hello, Mr. Jameson. This is Sam Hadley at headquarters. Well, fine, thanks. You? Swell. Listen, Mr. Jameson, you know more about this town than anybody else. You ever meet anyone named Kendall Endicott? A girl? K, like in Kansas City. Yeah, a double L. Really? Well, yeah, sure, sure. I'll hang on. Now we're getting somewhere.
You know who she is?
Well, not exactly, but he says the name rings a bell. He's going to check their morgue.
The morgue?
Newspaper morgue, lady, where they keep their records.
Oh, well, for a minute, I thought...
Yeah, I know what you thought.
Can I get you some tea or coffee?
Oh, don't bother.
Or how about something a little stronger? I think maybe I could find something.
I'm on duty, Mrs. Sims.
Sure, but what harm could one little snort do?
Thanks. Hello? Yes, Mr. Jameson. No kidding. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Thanks a lot. You've been a lifesaver. I'll drop by and give you the whole story. Right, so long.
What'd you say?
Plenty. You know who your guest is, lady? Kendall Endicott, heiress to a couple of million bucks. That's me. Who are you?
Clay Endicott, Sergeant. I've never been so glad to see anyone in my life.
What'd you say? You're Endicott?
That's right. Kendall's husband. I just heard about it on the radio in my hotel room. I just got to town 2 hours ago. The broadcast didn't give any details, just to contact you. Now, where is she? How is she? Can I see her right away, please?
Sure. She's over on Cliffside Drive, Summer Colony, the other side of town. I'll take you over in a squad car. You can fill me in on some details on the way over.
Is that you, Claire?
Sure is, honey. And do I have a surprise for you? Look who's here, hon.
Oh, you're the policeman, aren't you? Sergeant...
Hadley, ma'am. How are you feeling?
All right, thank you.
But look who else is here, Kendall.
I don't know what you mean.
Your husband.
My husband?
Oh, Candy, baby, oh, darling, I'll never forgive myself for staying that extra day in San Francisco. I should have been with you. You see, Sergeant, it's the first time I let her take the Jag out alone. It's an awful lot of car for a beginner to handle.
Yeah. Mrs. Endicott, don't you recognize him?
No.
Honey, it's me, Clay. You have to remember, darling, you don't just wipe out 3 years like that. Now think, darling. You were to meet me at 3:30 today here in town at the Waltham Hotel. We were going to the real estate office together. Now, please, darling, try to remember.
Well, I am. I'm sorry, but I can't.
Oh, now,
I can't.
Sergeant.
Yeah?
Will it be all right if I talk to her a little while, alone? I won't be long.
Up to her.
Darling?
All right.
Maybe if I talk about us, some of it'll come back, darling. Now, we got back from Europe in April. Oh, no, I guess I'd better start.
Gee, such a pity her not recognizing him. How'd you run into him, Sergeant?
Other way around. He heard the 5 o'clock bulletin on the radio.
Well, what are they doing here anyway? I mean, he said something about San Francisco.
He says they came down to buy the old Murchison estate.
Oh, what's that?
Big place with its own private beach down past the yacht club.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it from the road. Gee. I wonder how come she came down ahead of him.
Well, he says there's a kind of deadline on the property. They wanted to get their bid in first.
Oh, I didn't even know she was married.
Oh, yeah, that checks out.
She's really rich, isn't she?
So they tell me.
That Mr. Endicott, he's kind of cute.
Smart, too. It takes brains to marry money like she's got.
Oh, Sergeant, they could be in love.
Didn't say they weren't. Speaking of husbands, where's yours? Didn't you both come down for a vacation?
We did. It just so happens that Joe's idea of a vacation is to watch baseball on TV in some nice dim bar with a cold bottle of beer in front of him. He could have done that back in Redwood City, but oh no, he's got to save up all year to go somewhere else to do the same thing.
You still here, Sergeant?
Thought you might want to lift back to town.
Well, that's very kind of you, but Mrs. Sims, would it be too much of an imposition if I stayed here with my wife?
Stayed here?
I can sleep on the couch right here. Naturally, I'd pay you for your trouble.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Why should you be imposed on for nothing? It's only that my wife feels at home here. I'd rather not move her unless I had to.
Well, he doesn't, does he, Sergeant?
Not up to me, up to you.
Well, it's fine with me, Mr. Endicott. Really, it isn't. I know it'll be a real comfort to... Mrs. Endicott.
I understand the doctor's returning in the morning. If she's not better then, he can probably recommend a good private nursing home.
Well, looks like it's settled.
I certainly appreciate all you've done, Sergeant.
Mrs. Sims, I'll check in tomorrow morning.
All right, Sergeant. Bye.
Well, I would say so, my dear Mrs. Sims. I would say very well indeed.
You can cut the act now. What about her?
I'll sell her. It'll take time, but I'll sell her.
I don't trust that cop.
We have one thing in our favor, sweetie pie. Time. It's after 6 o'clock. Offices are closed. By the time the worthy sergeant can check more closely into my story, and he's going to, our little pigeon will be plucked and we'll be long gone.
How far have you got?
To the point where even if she doesn't remember me, she's willing to take my word that I'm her dearly beloved.
You would bring up the check?
Sweetie pie, I know this was all your idea, but you can certainly trust me to follow orders. Naturally, I mentioned the check, casually.
I told her we had only until tomorrow morning to close the deal with a down payment of $40,000. Otherwise, the real estate broker has another offer he's obligated to honor.
What'd she say?
Nothing. I'll bring it up again when I take her supper tray in.
You?
Obviously, sweetie pie. Who else but her adoring spouse? Don't worry, we'll get the money.
How suspicious you think that cop is?
Suspicion is a congenital weakness of all cops. I don't think he actively suspects me. And after all, my story was quite plausible.
Thanks to me.
I doff my hat, my dear, thanks to you.
Like I always said, you gotta be prepared to grab your chance when it comes, because it goes by real fast and may never come again.
Spoken like the true philosopher you are, my love. I wonder...
You wonder what?
What it feels like to be really married to $2 million.
You keep your mind on the job. You're already married. And don't you forget who to.
How could I, sweetie pie? You never give me a chance. Enjoy your breakfast, my dear.
It was all right. I wasn't very hungry.
Have to keep up our strength, don't we, darling?
Clay, will I regain my memory?
Of course, Candy. Oh, it may take a little time, but what difference does that make? What are a few days or even a week or two, as long as I'm around to take care of you?
Please be patient with me.
Oh, darling, how could I be anything else? All I care about is your getting well.
Tell me more about us. Where were we married?
Believe it or not, at the American Embassy in London.
London?
Mm-hmm. The ambassador himself married us. And you stood right there in front of him in your stocking feet.
Oh, I didn't.
You sure did. Later, you told me why. For good luck.
Good luck?
Uh-huh. You told me that as a little girl, whenever you wished very hard for something, you always took your shoes off and squinted up your face and turned around twice.
Well, did I squint up my face?
You sure did.
But I didn't turn around twice, did I?
Only because I stopped you. Darling, let me tell you, as hard as you were wishing, I was wishing even harder for our happiness, our life together.
Oh, Clay.
Oh, my love. Before I forget it, Candy, I'd better take the check now.
Is the house really worth that much?
It's a steal, darling, believe me. Here, make it out to cash. I figured if I walk in waving a lot of greenbacks at the broker, he might come down in price a little. Nothing like a long look at real paper money to soften a man. Oh, here, use my pen, Candy.
You won't be gone long, will you, Clay?
Only long enough to transact our business, honey.
It's funny. I've only just met you. What I mean.
I know what you mean.
And already I feel as if I'd known you for years. Hurry back.
Excuse me, folks, but the doctor's here.
He can come right in, Mrs. Sims. I was just going.
In just a moment, we will return for the concluding act of Suspense.
Now, here's Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy.
Bergy, I think someone's looking for you.
Oh, Mr. Bergen.
Well, hello, Effie Clinker. What's wrong?
My car battery is run down. I think it's an acid condition.
Oh, I see. Well, have you seen a serviceman?
Well, I had a blind date with a sailor last night, but he got away.
No, I mean a mechanic. Seeing you own a General Motors car, you should see your GM dealer for service. His mechanics are GM trained. They have specialized tools and factory approved parts to provide your fine GM car with the GM care it deserves. So if you own a Chevrolet car or truck, a Pontiac, an Oldsmobile, Buick, Cadillac, or a GMC truck, you should make a date with a General Motors serviceman.
Oh, that sounds exciting. Will he have blue eyes?
Kendall, you're dressed. What do you think you're doing?
Oh, I feel so much better, Claire. I thought I'd like to sit out here with you. Clay's not back yet, is he?
Well, he's probably on his way.
You don't mind my being out here, do you?
Mind? Well, of course not. It's just that... Well, did the doctor say it'd be all right?
Oh, yes. He said it might do me good.
What else did he say about your memory?
He says my only problem is to get over the shock of the accident.
Did he say when that would be?
He thought very soon.
Hi, Mrs. Sims. How's my... Kendall, what are you doing out of bed?
Well, the doctor said I could, Clay. I feel ever so much better.
Oh, great.
Have you seen the real estate man?
Sure. Just came from there.
Did he reduce his price?
Hmm? No. He wouldn't budge. I'm sorry, darling. I'm not the judge of character I thought I was. Still, it's a real steal.
Almost, anyway.
Well, what are you smiling for?
Because I'm so grateful to you.
Well, nonsense. I haven't done anything.
Oh, you're wrong, darling. Without you, I couldn't have done any of this.
What are you talking about?
Game's up, Mrs. Sims. Or whatever your real name is.
What?
In words of one syllable, you've lost. Now, Clay, darling, or is it Mr. Sims? I'll take that $40,000 that makes me such a pretty bulge in your jacket pocket.
But, darling, I told you that I...
You've told me so many things, haven't you? The $40,000, please.
Don't look at me.
All right, my dear. As you guessed, I didn't actually turn the money over to the agent. I thought if we waited until you were well enough to see him, you might be able to get a better price.
You don't give up easily, do you?
I beg your
pardon?
The
money.
Here. You needn't bother counting it. It's all there.
Oh, you don't mind if I run my fingers through it, do you?
Who are you?
How very discerning of you, dear Claire. You put your finger right on it.
You mean she's not Endicott?
That's exactly what she means, darling. I do have to be on my way, but why not tell you? Especially after all your hard work. My name is Taylor, Ruth Taylor. I'm Mrs. Endicott's private secretary. Convenient, huh? Oh, she's still in New York. I came on ahead. And by the time she arrives, I'll have recovered my memory, and I'll be horribly appalled at what I've done. But then, it wasn't really my fault, was it? Everyone told me I was Kendall Endicott. As for the money, I think I'll lose it. The whole idea is perfectly dreadful, but Mrs. Endicott will understand. She trusts me. And $40,000 doesn't mean so very much to her.
You can't get away with it.
But, Claire, dear, I already have. And you and that handsome impersonator can't do anything about it without implicating yourselves, can you? Bye-bye. Thanks for everything.
Hey, what about us? Don't we deserve at least a cut?
You deserve what you're getting, a chance to clear out before my employer shows up. Or would you rather I call that nice Sergeant Hadley? Extortion is a serious offense, I imagine. And who can prove I didn't have amnesia and didn't just recover? Oh, please don't bother seeing me out.
There goes $40,000.
Now stop moaning. We lost, period. Now let's get packed and get out of here.
But it looked like such a perfect setup.
It did, but it wasn't, so shut up about it. From now on, we stick to the horses.
And stay broke, huh?
It's better than the stretch in the pen. Now, come on, let's move. Uh-oh. It's not locked. Why, Sergeant Hadley, this is a pleasant surprise.
I doubt it. The girl, the car's gone. She take off?
Not more than 30 seconds ago. You just missed her.
Has something happened, Sergeant?
You still playing games, buddy? Give me Rizzo. Al Hadley. Just missed the girl. Put out an alarm. Pale blue Jaguar, Nevada license, 25KE. Yeah, I'll wait right here. Well, you almost got away with it, didn't you, Johnny?
Who?
John Edgar Bell. Well, that's your real name, isn't it? And this is your wife, Miriam?
Never mind us, that girl. She's not Kendall.
Yeah, save your breath. We know. The real one's flying in tonight. Let's get back to you two. How much did you take her for?
Well, that's it. She took us. She took the real Kendall Endicott.
What?
For $40,000. I cashed the check and brought the money back to her, didn't I, Mir?
That's the truth, Sergeant. Can't we make a deal with you?
If you take us in, it'll only cost the county the expense of the trial and tie up a lot of your time. But if you let us go, we'll be out of town in an hour and you'll be rid of us for good.
After all, Sergeant, we've never gotten in trouble before and, well, can't we have a second chance?
A chance to take somebody else?
No, to stick to what we know, playing the horses.
Hadley.
Yeah, Al.
What?
Where? Oh, brother. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
What happened?
The Jaguar crashed through a retaining wall and ended up 500 feet down the canyon.
What about the girl?
She's had her last accident.
What about us?
You're coming down to headquarters for a search. If you're clean, I'll give you an hour to be out of town.
Oh, thanks.
Save it, save it. I've seen grifters like you before. You'll try your luck again sometime, someplace. Just make sure it's a long, long way from here.
Suspense. You've been listening to The Girl in the Powder Blue Jag, written for Suspense by Walter Black. Featured in tonight's story were Rita Lloyd, Jane Rose, and Bob Dryden. Listen again next week when we return with another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday from August 28, 1960. And that wraps up this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for tuning in.